Veronica is very relatable in this episode in a way that is terrifying. But she really like goes, what she goes through in this episode is so grounded compared to almost everything else that's ever happened on this show. And it's played like she's an absolute lunatic.
Yeah. Yeah. it also shows like how shallow the dating pool is in Riverdale, because like, you know what? The only viable options are the people you went to high school with who for some reason are all still here, and you left and you came back.
Pals and gals, and wait, welcome to another episode of XOXO Riverdale.
Wake up to a new episode.
I'm Louis Perlman.
I'm Kate Batter.
This is your favorite Riverdale fan podcast, hosted by two adult comedians that should know better than to still be watching this show. If you enjoy what you're hearing, you can subscribe, you know, and follow us that way on any podcatcher of your choice, and you can interact with us on social media. If you look up XOXO Riverdale on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, we are there. We're joined by a very special guest. He rocks, he rolls, he is the host of the Geeks Out podcast and the Flamecast, because he is one of the organizers of FlameCon, which is New York City's only fully LGBTQIA+ comic book geek fan convention. It is happening this year, August 20th and 21st. It's always such a good time. It's really one of the best events that happens all year in this stinking garbage city. He is a regular sketch performer at the Pit. He was a notable, funny, fun guest on Billy on the Street when I believe, and you can confirm this or not, you ended up outing yourself to your family with Billy interviewing you for a game show. Yes, that's right. Right, Kevin?
No, that's correct. Yeah.
Yes. I remember this and I didn't know you, so.
Yeah. I DJ'd his wedding. Please welcome Kevin Gilligan.
Yay. Thank you for having me.
We're thrilled to have you. It's so nice to have someone who's a funny comedian, dude, queer guy like myself who is like still watching the show, just because like we used to have a lot more comics on the show, I would argue, and so many people have just dropped the show, which is understandable, that it's like it's really, really, really nice to have someone on who is going to have some hot takes.
So, a key thing to know about me is that I am a glutton for punishment. I stick with things long, like, I'm still watching Grey's Anatomy.
Well, me too.
Yeah. Like, there are shows I was just like, I mean, I put the time in. Like, how much longer can this horse be beaten? Like... I'll watch it, I guess. So I went back and watched the full series of Dexter after knowing like how it ends, like hearing all of like the, oh no, the ending. Oh my God, how did they end it that way? But I chose to go into that. So some people have their kinks. This is mine. So it's like light kink.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not a big fan of pain. Emotional pain, sure. Mental anguish, yeah. Physical pain, no thank you. I'm good.
So a big question for you to start the episode, just because this is something we've had a lot of chats about over the last few episodes of the podcast. How are you feeling about this season and the way that it compares to the other seasons? Are you enjoying it more? Are you enjoying it less? What do you think about it right now?
I feel like it is the crazy that we were all kind of feeling in pandemic that was just like, why not? You know what? Just, you know, I need something just absolutely stupid and crazy at this point. Does it make sense? No. Is it entertaining? I guess. You know, does it pass time? It fills the hours, you know?
But something you just said that I want to address that I actually think is a really interesting point is it does have the unhinged voice of, you know, the long quarantine that we all had to do, you know, for really multiple years. And I think the show kind of benefits from it because it sort of, you know, takes risks that it wasn't willing to take before, and at least it makes it a little more fun, right? Would you argue that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It totally has been like, you know what? Just fuck it. I don't care anymore. You know, my husband he stopped seasons ago. He tried. He really did. He goes, he actually.
And your husband is one of the most optimistic, like, patient men that I've, like, literally ever met, actually.
But he's just like, nothing that they do makes sense. Like, and I was like, yeah, that's the point. He's like he, this was like pre cult. He dropped off pre cult and was like imagining, like, you know, a scenario that was not going to happen. It's like, next thing you know, they're going to be like astronauts and going into space. And then I was like, they almost kind of did, you know.
There was a little cardboard rocket at one point in that plot line. Yeah,
Chad Michael Murray was going to take them to space. You know, I mean, I understand that. I've seen him in person. You know,
he does carry over off screen.
Yeah, he's handsome. You know, he's charming. You know, he was drunk when I met him, but you know,
when is he not?
What are you going to do?
He probably was pretty drunk to get through filming the show.
You'd have to be.
He's B-list Ben McKenzie, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, Kevin, we're so happy to have you join us. And for, speaking of the writers, for Brian F. Patterson's final episode of the series, which is interesting, he's moving on to other things. And he was a big, 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 big voice on the show. So it's called Biblical. But before we get to the recap, Kate, what's going on in Riverdale news?
I believe I posted it to the XOXO Instagram. But if you didn't see it and you want to see it, shoot us a little message. Most of my personal Instagram algorithm is dogs. And someone put a cardboard hat on a husky and just had the audio of the, like, I'm weird, I'm a weirdo speech. And it, what I do like too, is it cut off before he said, have you ever seen me without this stupid hat? Which means it was only a reference for people that knew what that was from.
Yes. Like, they weren't holding your hand there. Yeah.
No. And the algorithm, like, really came through on that one by showing it to me.
I'm curious how much longer the I'm weird, I'm a weirdo meme is going to exist and be a fun thing post the life of this show. And when it becomes cringe for, like, a generation of kids that are too young for having watched Riverdale when it was on.
I think it might pull, like, a Borat where it goes, like, really cringe for a while. And then in, like, 15 years, we're going to be at a party and someone's going to say I'm weird and we're going to, like, lose it.
Totally. It also might coincide with, like, a Riverdale reunion season or some shit like that, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that a new generation won't think it's cringe. They'll just embrace it in a new way.
Yes. And then Kevin found a quote from our illustrious leader, Roberto Aguirre Sacasa, about a choice that they're making for the season finale of this season, and how hearing about their cancellation influenced that. Kevin, go for it. So thrilled that you did some research for this.
Oh, yeah. You call it research. I just call it doom scrolling. So he was interviewed for Entertainment Weekly about CW deciding to end the show. And he was like, you know, we were thinking about seven seasons, you know, years going to be what their run was. And so they weren't completely caught by surprise. They are actually plotting out the last episode of this season. And he goes, and quote, "And we were weighing a very big swing for the end of the season and into season 7. And when the news came down, it was like, we're doing this. So it was really good timing. I think it emboldened us to run into this wild choice quite happily."
I wonder what the big swing is going to be.
Puppets?
They all get turned into dolls, into little puppets. Yeah.
It's the gas leak season.
I honestly think it's just going to, they're just going to drop Riverdale and it's just going to be a new season of Sabrina.
Well, you know, let's not get the cart ahead of the horse, but I am quite curious if we can talk about this now because everybody has watched the episode. I am curious if they're going to sign her on to be like recurring for the final season. I wouldn't be surprised if they did that. And if she's just sort of a regular character popping in and out of the show.
Or maybe my husband saw into the future and we're going to have Riverdale in space, you know?
Well, that would be hilarious because, you know, there is a season of the old Josie and the Pussycats cartoon that just inexplicably is suddenly in space. So that'd
yes.
be, there is precedent for it. That would be really funny.
It'll be like Josie and the Pussycats in space, but also that the inexplicable Friday the 13th movie that was in space. Oh,
that movie's great. Jason in space. That's a wonderful movie.
Yeah, because there has to be more deaths, obviously.
Oh, definitely. I'd love for them to troll everybody and just do their Josie and the Pussycats spinoff for the final season of this. And just because that episode was delightful. And I'm sad that they clearly didn't go ahead with some sort of, that it wasn't actually a backdoor pilot for anything.
Well, so I don't think that they will, just because unless Tom Swift does not get picked up for a second season, because what's her name is in that series now. So,
oh, okay.
Ashley Murray.
Ashley Murray's in the Tom Swift show. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
So she's occupied. She's busy doing other CW shows. Yes. Let's get into it. Biblical. They're having plagues now, everybody.
This episode has everything. It's got frogs. It's got boils. It's got blood coming out of all of the faucets.
I did end up at one point starting an official checklist of plagues. Like, went to Wikipedia to see what I already knew crossed over. And it's little check marks because it does play fast and loose with what counts.
Yeah. And also, are these just the 10 plagues of the Book of Exodus, the Passover story, or are these, there's some other ones in there too, right?
It's very confusing on what they count as pestilence.
Totally. Pestilence is like maggots and bugs and rotting and whatever.
Right, but then they called it corruption. And then it was like, also like, or is this going to be famine? But like, famine's not in there, but it's still like sort like pestilence is just, they eventually say pestilence and it's like, I thought that's what they were doing with the food. It's really.
Well, famine was that they, for temporarily, they were not able to have food for the wedding venue
that's
that
right.
they wanted.
Right.
Which in this world is akin to famine.
But then that is what they considered pestilence. But then later in the episode, they're like, we haven't had pestilence yet. And they called the pestilence corruption. It was very confusing.
Also, to address this now while we're talking about the plagues, did Percival just turn the water red? Or is the water blood?
Unclear.
No, okay, fine. None of us know. Because it seemed like that was more of a visually creepy thing for him to do, but not like, now this town doesn't have access to water thing to do. Just, right. Yeah, just so, okay, fair enough.
It's, you know, it's one of those that they go on the radio, it's like, okay, folks, so you gotta boil the water a little longer today.
That's kind of how it felt. Yeah, I yeah. agree. Yeah, that it's like, so, things that happen in smaller towns every once in a while, where it's like, we do have a issue, you do need to boil your water, like, yeah.
They have been mining, what is it, palladium, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, You know, it's the palladium. It's, you know, it's their version of fracking and water, you know.
Yeah, the palladium leakage. Yeah. So then we have, they ask Veronica, Tony asks Veronica to plan this wedding, the wedding of Tony and Fangs. And Veronica, this feels like a little bit of a leap in that all of a sudden Veronica's like, wow, I guess I'm just a glorified, like, party planner now. But, like, it's not like Veronica planning, you know, serial con. That felt different than this. This feels like they're conflating two different things into one thing for the sake of the plot.
This felt like, yeah, they just needed to get Veronica looped in somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of the ways they looped people into this wedding were insane.
Well, yes, yes. That is a good point. Absolutely. And then I did appreciate in the next scene, want to point it out that Archie asked Betty if she was up for going to the wedding. And it was a rare acknowledgement on this show of something traumatizing happening to a character in the episode previous. So,
what I will say is that Betty said maybe after SlaughterCon, which yes. happened already. So,
yeah. Oh, no. I thought what she was saying is after SlaughterCon, I do feel like I'm up for this.
It was like maybe she said like maybe I'll be up for it after SlaughterCon.
Maybe that scene took place before the events of the last episode.
That's what I thought, but then I like remembered that the SlaughterCon episode did also have the bachelorette party, and then I was just like, I don't know what's going on.
Yes. So, but yes, go for it, Kevin.
There's also like, that's real fucked that you're asking your friend days before your wedding to be like, hey, we've had this bachelorette party, all of this other stuff has happened. Could you also throw this wedding? Like, it's either like it's only been days or the timeline is just real fucked because like this happened a while ago. And yeah.
And I would add to that, Veronica, Tony, perfectly well acquainted characters. It's a real lean on Veronica considering the context of their friendship.
Right.
I will also jumping back to Betty. Even if the context is like, well, she is feeling more up to it now that SlaughterCon has passed. SlaughterCon was before she murdered TBK.
Like, yes!
That timeline also doesn't work.
I mean, like,
There's no timeline.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, I mean, we're going to harp on this. This is going to be over half the episode. But Betty killing TBK is more of a big plot point to recap in this episode than SlaughterCon, but instead they go with SlaughterCon, and it led to me not remembering what happened in the last episode. So
nope.
Instead of them just spelling it out for us.
I thought SlaughterCon happened in the last episode.
Yes, but then I remembered all that shit about TBK as well. Yeah, as it was going on. So then we get this scene with Jughead, who is, we learn is writing down the stories of Rivervale. He's writing Rivervale's stories, which is fun. And the fact that they are weaving Rivervale in this way is like, we didn't expect Rivervale to come back in any kind of way. So this is pretty good.
Well, we knew, like, I guess it was 2 weeks ago when he first started hearing all the voices, like, right yep. at the end of the episode, we heard the Rivervale voices.
Yes.
But then they forgot about it for an episode. Or didn't forget about it for an episode and everything's happening out of order.
Sure. and then the next thing I want to address is basically we're having a conversation here with Veronica about becoming a glorified party planner, but it's really actually about work-life balance. And I do think that's kind of interesting and something that could have been explored a little more in depth in a way that was a little more mature, where Veronica is maybe coming to the realization that the only people she dates are people that she is working with.
Veronica is very relatable in this episode in a way that is terrifying. But she really like Ghost, what she goes through in this episode is so grounded compared to almost everything else that's ever happened on this show. And it's played like she's an absolute lunatic.
Yeah. Yeah. it also shows like how shallow the dating pool is in Riverdale, because like, you know what? The only viable options are the people you went to high school with who for some reason are all still here and you left and you came back.
And it is, it's a very small world for sure. And it also, but then on the flip side of that, I'd argue that it's always jarring when someone new comes in and you're like, who the fuck is this? Like, I feel like maybe this is a challenge about writing the show, is that there's these core based on the comic book characters. So then when they bring in anybody else, I think it does like throw off the dynamic of the show in a way. And I'm not even talking about like Tony or Fangs, who were like sort of brought in pretty organically as the show went on. But I am definitely talking about like Drake. The like Drake really feels like a Mary Sue. I'm like, who is this? Or fake
Knock Off Adam Driver.
Yeah, Knock Off Adam Driver.
Glenn.
Yeah, Glenn. Yeah, like Glenn was really stuck out like a sore thumb. So, you know, every once in a while, you know, I do think it is something that's kind of hard with the show. But it would be nice to, I hope Veronica ends the show with someone who's nice, who she likes. That would make me really happy.
Mm-hmm. It'll be Betty.
I'd love that. I'd love that if that's how they ended the entire show, would be that they're actually in love with each other. I think that'd be... I would love that. They deserve each other. They're both nice and sweet. And they've killed a lot of people.
Together. It's a real balance.
It is. It's a real balance. Yeah. So.
So I think it's interesting.
Yes.
That all it took to make Kevin a good person again was seeing Percival like play with a toy through a hole in a wall. And that was it. And now Kevin's good again.
I mean, that's what it worked for me. You know, I used to be real evil, and
yeah, you
I
were looked, involved in a scary custody battle,
in a cult. Mm-hmm. I make a lot of you know, Kevin's in general just make questionable choices. So
yes, yeah, Kevin Keller, they've done this with other characters in the past, but. They're really constantly doing him a disservice in that they're just writing him however they want, you know, which Kate and I have complained a lot about on the show. But I do kind of think they get away with it because he is kind of a catch-all, kind of milquetoasty gay character. And just in contrast, sort of a nice fandom thing, Dan Parent, who is a friend of the show and is the creator of Kevin Keller – he kickstarted this giant omnibus of Kevin Keller stories, and I got mine in the mail this week and was leafing through it, and it's like every single Kevin Keller story that has ever been written for Archie that's like prominent. And just like they give him actual attributes that they follow through with, and he has an actual character, and the character grows as the stories continue. And it just – a lot of that I hadn't looked at in a while, and it reminded me that like – this character is an actual character, not just sort of a weird cipher. So that's all.
I did write, will they explain this change? And they don't. And then later, how everyone else views this change is also insane.
The commentary for me is that, you know what? If you're a single gay man, you're fucked up. You know, you need a relationship.
Well, that's often been the case because, and that's something that Kate and I have talked about a lot that I think you'd appreciate, Kevin, is we do feel the show sex shames Kevin a lot. Instead of it just being like, Kevin likes to hook up. It's fine. It's like, there's something bad going on. You're looking for guys on Grindr. And it's like, no, that inherently in itself isn't actually a bad thing to be doing. And that is, and the cruising too, the making right. The cruising seem so torrid.
I will say, and him starting this whole episode looking through a peephole.
Yeah.
Was mad sus.
Yep. And it's funny because another question that I was thinking about Kevin in prep for this episode is I was wondering if they were beginning to get freaked out that they were writing him too much as a gay villain. So they're trying to back off on that and do sort of a course shift for the character at this point in the season. But then they are still sort of trading in that imagery to kind of like villainize him, you know, like sort of the stereotypical stuff about gay people that people don't, you know, that people are supposed to think is morally bad.
Well, even so, like having him as this character who has, you know, evil or was seduced by Percival, mind controlled to a certain extent, and that control is being broken by, I guess, relationship with Moose, maybe, you know, a strong, steady relationship with an ex-boyfriend from the past who returns for mysterious reasons, but even like his use as being like a character to be able to like get intel on Percival is like, he can't even really do that. Like his use, like they give him a use and then they just end it real quick. Mm-hmm. There's not even like, oh, we'll continue this for further storylines to actually give him something to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
I agree. It's like, so he'll be doing something totally different next episode because there is no through line. And then like his relationship with Moose agreed. I think that's what they're trying to connote, but it'd be great to be able to see Moose for more than two frames of every episode, because also Kate and I have a major crush on that actor and all we want to do is see him. We love him. We think he's the cutest man of all time. So
what if their big swing for episode 7 is just making the show about Moose?
Oh, yeah, or maybe Moose, like, takes his shirt off and sings a song. That'd be a pretty good big
swing.
That's
what we want, is more songs.
I don't want more songs, but I do want Moose.
More shirtless, I know.
More shirtless Moose, yeah.
If you want songs, then this episode has songs.
So, then we get a great thing to happen that Kate and I have been wishing for, which is for Cheryl to set Percival on fire, thrilled.
To start the scene, she says, they're like, what are we going to do about this? And Cheryl says, and I wrote it down in quotes, playing devil's advocate, which is what I do best. And then she does not play devil's advocate.
No, she just plays advocate.
Yeah, she doesn't counter anything.
No.
She just like, they're just like, what are we going to do? And she's like, here's an idea. And then that's the end of it.
Well, Cheryl.
And that idea is kill him.
Yeah, kill him. And well, Cheryl maybe doesn't have an understanding of what devil's advocate means.
It got to the point in my very quick run through of situations here where I think she just like genuinely thinks it's working with the devil.
Yes.
Like, there's no like, like she sees being devil's advocate as like the most literal sense of the term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her shoulders are, you know, the weight on her shoulders is a lot. You know, she's running a maple company that also I think is doing maple liquor, and also a school or orphanage or
a Professor Xavier school. Yeah.
Something, yeah. You know, for gifted, wicked, witchy youth, you know, there's a lot going on, you know,
also, being able to know. You started the sentence with, she has a lot of weight on her shoulders. And in this scene, she had real big puffy shoulders on her shirt. So I was like, oh, this is fun. And then you gave like a real response and I was like, oh, okay.
Well, a real joke response, but yes.
Yes. And then we had La Llorona come in and steal the story from Jughead. And I love that public domain monster La Llorona has made another appearance on Riverdale. And then we did get a really nice message while they were folding all the nice bird napkins. Yes.
You skipped a little.
I did, yes.
First I want to say that earlier when Percival was threatening, blackmailing Archie, he mentioned snakes, and then at no point otherwise in this episode were there really snakes. And then I thought, is Percival the snake? Like, is that what they're going with? And I think they just forgot they mentioned snakes.
Yeah, like the Percival thing, the villain. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that there's a scene in the FBI office where Betty asks, not Drake, just that like other woman.
Yes.
For like
other FBI lady.
For like a bunch of Bibles, like several Bibles.
Yes.
Which doesn't make sense. And then the woman's like, I didn't know you were religious. And I'm like, well, if she were religious, she would have already had the Bibles and wouldn't need to ask for them. And then it's like, I feel like Betty could have just Googled the Bible. I don't know. It's public domain. Seems like a lot of people care a lot about it.
Yeah, guess they couldn't, you know, afford Drake's day rate. That's all. Like, to have that actor be in that one scene for that episode, whatever.
What's the FBI database on plagues? Can you dive into what past plagues have happened that the FBI has studied?
Yeah, has studied. Yeah.
It seems like it would have been Drake's department too, considering she's just immediately on board with absolutely everything.
Yeah, everything that's totally bonkers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we get this life continues during wartime scene, which I appreciated only because it's the way I'm feeling right now, and this felt pertinent to me. Life has to continue during difficult battles. So I appreciated that, and I also appreciated in that scene how Veronica called him Anthony as opposed to baby Anthony. It's a rare instance of that that is worth bringing up.
Yeah. This scene also, or the scene immediately after it, is where Cheryl tells Heather that Tony asked Cheryl to officiate the wedding.
Yes.
Which is one of the single strangest decisions in the entire show. If it's meant for any other reason than Tony being a stone cold bitch to her ex.
That is just lesbian violence.
It was absolutely true.
It was not okay for network television. It was wild.
Legit hate crime. Like, not nice.
And in Pride Month?
Yep. But the big Pride Month moment in this episode is coming up fast and furious, so we'll get to it. Yeah. We all know what we're talking about. So, and then Cheryl, you know, tries to give Tony the wedding gift of killing Percival, which I love, after the food has been cursed. And then we do have one of my favorite scenes we've had in a while, which is Jughead being tempted by a hamburger and him not being able to resist eating it, which really just feels like it's been ripped from the pages of a newsstand double digest and is just in this episode. So it is notable. Also, a rare instance of him eating a burger on screen in the series.
What I also think is notable is, why hasn't he gone down that tunnel otherwise? Like, why did it take a burger?
Because the voices. He said he wouldn't. He can't leave because the voices increase or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
So maybe he needs to stay there. Yeah. And then we had the scene where Cheryl uses like a voodoo doll to try. That's insensitive because voodoo's a real religion, and I have a lot of respect for it. And this is all nonsense. She uses a doll. She sets it on fire to try to set Percival on fire using her powers, and then Percival reverses it, and Nana Rose is like
engulfed.
Yes, thank you, Kate. That issue is solved later on by them rubbing a salve on her.
Yeah, from their garden. Boy. I'm sure.
I did notice that Percival knows a lot of Latin offhand.
Well, I do think Percival is like an ancient demon, and I think he does speak fluent Latin.
Yeah, it's hard to think through literally anything when you're personally on fire.
Yes.
Let alone an ancient curse in another language. But he just pulled that one right out of his back pocket. He was like, you know, I have done some fire drills in my time.
Yep.
I know what this is like. I'm going to go light an old woman on fire instead.
In case of fire, speak Latin. Yeah. You know?
And then we get to the rehearsal dinner. And a few things that I want to say first that are nice. I think it's nice that they're at Pops. I think it's, you know, nice. I think that they all look really cute in their outfits. I'm into that. And then we have a just bewildering choice. Happy Pride Month to all. Stephen Sondheim comes to Riverdale with Veronica / Cammy Mendez singing all of Ladies Who Lunch, an unedited version of Ladies Who Lunch, which is completely baffling. For those of you who do not know, Ladies Who Lunch, from the famous Stephen Sondheim musical Company, which is currently being revived on Broadway and is parodied in the excellent...
Oh, I wrote Co-op, Paula Co-op.
Yeah, parodied in the excellent Documentary Now episode Co-op.
It's the Paula Pell one.
Yeah, with Paula Pell.
But my note on this was, she is going through it. Like,
yeah.
Oh, poor Veronica needs some time and a nice vacation.
Absolutely. And
poof.
It's also like she is throwing drinks. Everybody is looking at her like she is, this is the craziest thing that's ever happened to all of them, which is not true. but then, and then like, they, there's a lot of reaction shots. Like, this scene was poorly directed because there's a lot of reaction shots where they're looking at her like, oh my God, our friend has gone crazy. And then at the end of it, they all give her a standing ovation and they're all like, yay, this is great.
Well, they weren't really going to stand up, but then she kept singing the stand up line and started directly pointing at people.
Yeah.
Like, you need to stand up.
Totally. Totally. And that all happens. And that's all Awkward Town USA. But then like the song ends and then they are all like, once it ends, they're all on board. They're all like, okay, that was great. And that's really weird.
I think if I were there, I wouldn't be of the mind like, oh, this is weird. I think I'd be like, is Veronica okay? And I honestly would clap because I think she needs it.
Yes, that's totally fair. Absolutely.
But my thought process was 100% different from everyone in that diner.
Yes. and then Betty, God bless her, invites Veronica very sweetly to go to the wedding with Archie, like the three of them together, like a little, which they've done in the past. And Veronica refuses, which made me a little sad. I kind of wanted them to do it again.
I would think it would be really sad, but I also think that Veronica was right to say no to that. I think she needs space and not to just like insert herself in a throuple. Like, she just doesn't need any of this right now.
But I do feel like a lot of their problems would be solved if they were a throuple.
Oh, for sure. But it seems like right now in this moment is maybe not the time.
Yes, that's fair. then we had... The next thing I want to address, because we talked about a lot of the other stuff that happens in there, is just didn't really need to hear a scene with Jughead puking. Just want to say, yeah, we both agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't need to. He could have just like passed out. We would have been like, got it.
Yeah, totally. But instead we had puke time. Yeah. Yep. And then the next thing I want to talk about is how Kevin calls Percival a magic man. I wish Kevin had sung the heart song Magic Man. Just to
we would have needed is a fourth song in the episode. Yeah, so thank you for recommending it.
Yes.
Yeah. And then this would have been like the second musical episode of the season.
Yes, that is correct.
Right after. This wasn't last week?
Yeah, last week was American Psycho. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, also, real quick, want to point out, we were speculating why they went with American Psycho, and someone pointed out to us on Twitter that R.A.S. wrote the book for the American Psycho musical.
He did?
Like, it was a very simple explanation, and we never got there.
Well, that's fine.
No, but this one, they had Company, and then they had... The wedding singer,
which Adam Sandler is a big part of this podcast. So.
Yes, we talk about Adam Sandler at any opportunity.
I was going to get to this, how thrilling it was to have a nice little Adam Sandler reference.
Yes.
It was for us.
But also that Kevin, like, is reluctantly invited to the wedding. Like, they're like, okay, you can come to the wedding. But also, last minute, step in as the wedding singer for this.
Yes.
We'll get to that whole thing.
Then we had this very scary boils scene, which I thought mm-hmm. was genuinely quite effective.
Yeah. Which I will say, so at this point was when I like Wikipedia and made sure I had my little checklist for all the plagues. And they cut to Betty's Charlie Day board. That's what
yes.
we call it.
Yeah.
The Charlie Day boards.
Yeah.
You know what we're talking about. And yeah. she did have on there snakes, which once again are just like not really part of this, but they keep bringing them up.
Yeah.
But then she did have boils, and I was like, all right, boils are next. It was like the third time they mentioned snakes without like really doing anything with snakes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Are the snakes just serpents? Is it just that they were here the whole time?
Like as in the like the gang, the serpents?
Yeah.
Sure.
Why not?
Love that headdress Cheryl had in the trip scene.
Oh man. I love this.
Yes. Just wanted to point it out. And you know, Jughead's having his second bad trip in the bunker in the series. You know, and then I want to pause just for a sec. I just let my next meeting know that I'll be a little delayed so that we can have like another 10 minutes to wrap up
sure.
because yeah, just to let you guys know. Cool. And we're now at like 40 minutes, so I can let our editor know. Okay. All right, continuing.
Yes. Yeah, so she, the like Dream Cheryl takes more of Jughead's story. So we have this scene. The next scene is Kevin in Percival's little menagerie.
Needful things shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, like digging around for a notebook. And Percival walks in behind him, which we knew. And Percival says, and I quote, "I was out picking up delivery."
Yes.
Like,
not picking up takeout or picking up food.
Yes.
Picking up delivery.
I also like, thought that was very odd.
That's like ships in the night with the food. That's not how delivery works. It's patently, it's famously not how delivery works.
Next thing. Okay. So, okay. Betty. This is when it is revealed that Betty perhaps is the harlot of Babylon. Mm-hmm. Now, previously, we have learned that Jughead is going to die to sacrifice himself for Riverdale. That is in the that has been predicted in the show previous, right? So what your guys' take on this? I now believe that the series finale of the show, or the last few episodes, whatever, however the war will shake down, is going to involve Betty being turned to the dark side, Betty becoming this harlot of Babylon, this harbinger of destruction, Jughead pulling her out, and then that leading to his sacrifice, and that it is going to frame the show as really being about Bughead, ultimately. What do we think? Do you think I'm getting this right after this revealing today in this episode?
I think that sounds super fun and not what they're going to do.
Kevin?
I mean, that it makes sense in terms of like it puts everything back, the focus back on the core of yeah. them, and like where you have, you know, it's a trope for a reason, where someone in the group turns evil,
mm-hmm.
and they haven't, not of the core group,
no,
they haven't really had someone sort of turn evil,
no,
per se.
That is true.
So it becomes that the story is their redemption, or their, you know, being saved or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's
essentially the plot of the 8th Fast and the Furious movie.
Yeah. We're family. Yeah.
And then also regarding my theory and sort of the thing I wanted to address next in this episode. Like, what do we think is going on? How does baby Anthony factor in? Is he Jesus, baby Anthony? I thought Jughead was maybe Jesus.
I have a feeling it's like a Damien, like, omen kind of thing, you know, or like Rosemary's Baby, but like delayed kind of, like, it's an innocent child who can be made good or evil.
Yeah.
I like that, yeah. Kevin.
Almost,
yeah.
Leaning more, and I hate to say it, but a little bit more Harry Potter, where they were born and could have gone one way or the other, depending on what happens.
Totally. Totally.
Like, he's not all the way either there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's
You're
definitely...
a serpent, Tony.
You're a serpent, baby Anthony.
We do hit, like, a few more of the plagues.
Sure.
And we find out that Percival's stockpiling weapons.
Right. Yes.
And that...
But they're, like, medieval they're weapons. Like
old-timey weapons. Yeah, yeah. That like, maybe won't work so great.
Yeah, including a stockade.
Yeah, there's a reason why we don't do it anymore. And then, like, this starts to be, like, why does the TBK and Percival both see Betty as the harlot of Babylon? Like, are they besties? And then Betty says, we're gonna stop the plague.
Right.
Like that. She says plague. And they left it in.
And they just didn't do another take.
Oh, and we get before they are able to stop it, we get darkness. Mm-hmm.
That scene.
During that, Archie has been blackmailed to continue work shirtless on his own on the railroad. And he's doing it, and the plagues haven't stopped, but he continues to do it because
he's got to stop the
convictions. He's, you know, yeah. But shirtless, so that we can fully get every ripply ab on his body. Because it's been a hot minute since we've had an ab scene from.
Also, the way that scene was lit and the way it was shot, it almost like looked like a Rockwell painting. Like there was a real sort of Americana aspect to it. And also, I would argue it looked almost like Renaissance biblical as well. You know, maybe that's what they were going for more than Rockwell, now that I'm like talking through it. And our friend of the podcast, Jenna, who live tweets for us sometimes on our account, she tweeted today, I wonder if Riverdale's literally going to end with Archie getting crucified. And like, I wouldn't actually be surprised.
I mean, the way he was holding like the wood thing or the pile or whatever, you know, it was very evocative of, you know, the crucifixion.
Yeah. Christ imagery. Yeah. And it would be a real bold, well, that might be the swing for the fences move. Maybe it's going to end. Maybe the season's going to end with Archie being crucified.
Oh my God. I hope so.
I know.
For Riverdale's sins.
Yeah. For Riverdale's sins. Oh, it'd be great.
I think probably, One of the great moments of the episode is when they do get one over on Percival and lock him in the stockade meant for Betty. Because one, it ties in things that had already happened, because the whole like invisible spell, you know, you just hold your breath. If you hold your breath, you're invisible. So she gets the jump on Percival. Kevin gets that sort of like extra like, I'm totally not your lackey anymore. I'm arresting you.
Yeah, he's under arrest.
Yeah. And then we're gonna lock you in a stockade, like, you know, prisoners do.
Well, you know, with the way things are going with police in this country right now, they probably are locking people in stockade. That was the most realistic thing that happened in the episode.
That's true.
An excessive force complaint isn't going to do anything to Kevin's career, so why not?
No. Oh, man. No.
So Do either of you, just to get back to this ship in a bottle thing and the Flash of Jughead, was a ship in the bottle a really
Message
big
in a bottle?
Huh?
Message
well,
in
no,
a bottle?
But then it flashed to the ship in the bottle
from Rivervale.
From Rivervale,
oh,
and I'm
right.
trying to remember what the significance of that was in Rivervale.
That was when he found that like extra room in their apartment that was behind a wall. It
that's
was
right.
filled, and then that's where he gets like closed in.
That's right. Mm. That's right. Okay, cool. So then I realized that, and this was sort of fun, after the act break, most of the narration from Jughead from the episode felt more biblical than normal, which is kind of fun. I thought it was fun that they were playing with that. And then we got this fucking sequence where all of a sudden Kevin's invited to the wedding, which made me go crazy.
Forgive him so instantly for so much.
Yeah, he made their life absolute hell. Yeah.
Give him plus one.
I know. Oh my god. Ugh. Like, way to, ugh, it's terrible.
Not only plus one, but wedding singer.
Like, yes, wedding singer. Yeah, he's the star attraction of the wedding now. And he is, because the vows that they have, the two of them, I could not believe how poorly written these vows were for a pretty important event on the show.
I can think of one time in a TV show I liked the vows.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, talking about Grey's Anatomy, when Alex just stole someone's graduation speech and said it word for word as though it was vows.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's like, they weren't even really vows. Like, I don't think I've ever seen good TV vows.
Speaking of which, just because I think this is a personal, very funny thing to bring up. Kevin, I never told you this, but the ceremony that your friend wrote for your wedding,
yeah.
I stole 3/4 of it to officiate my cousin's wedding.
It's fine. Fine.
Yeah. He didn't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So... we have these boring ass vows. Then we have like the grasshopper locusts. Properly locusts chewing through the wormwood
while mm-hmm. he's humming Ride of the Valkyries.
Yes, while he's humming Ride of the Valkyries, like a little Nazi.
I will say, the captions did say scatting Ride of the Valkyries.
Yes, scatting! I noticed that. Which he wasn't really scatting. I wish he was.
No. But he wasn't humming either. Like, I get that he was vocalizing.
And then,
I don't know if I call that otherwise, so.
Also, that these locusts somehow got through the sealed vault.
Well, there were air vents.
Okay. Yeah.
So
that's true.
Then
otherwise he would have suffocated. Right.
Yeah.
Last question about this scene. Last question that I have.
About the wedding or about the locusts?
The wedding, just in general.
Okay.
Britta is dancing with this nice woman.
And they're like part of the show.
Yeah.
And who is this woman?
Who and
it seems like Britta's her girlfriend. Okay, fine. I just was wondering if maybe I missed something there.
But I do want to double down on the fact that they did choose the wedding singer.
Yes.
Because we have done multiple non-Riverdale, fully Adam Sandler episodes podcast.
That's true.
And I was like, they definitely went with it because he's just at a wedding. So it's the wedding singer. But there was part of me that's like, maybe they're listening, you know?
Yeah. Maybe they're listening to our wonderful podcast.
That you really take away from this podcast, it's how much we love Moose and how much we love Adam Sandler.
And we do know, because he wrote to us once before we started really ragging on the show, that we know Brian Patterson listened once and wrote to us about it, which was very sweet of him. And he wrote this episode, so maybe he's still a fan.
Maybe he's still a fan, and he was like, these kids like Moose, and they like Adam Sandler.
Yup, so we're putting it in. So then we have a scene where Percival escapes and suffocates Nana Rose, which of course made me very upset for all of 5 minutes. Because I was oh no.
I was kind of surprised, because this whole time, like, one of the plagues is death of the firstborn. Mm-hmm. So I assume this whole episode was building up to the death of Anthony.
Yes.
So when it went to Nana Rose as the oldest firstborn in Riverdale, I was like pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like
mm-hmm.
sad that she's dead, but like, okay.
And, yeah. And then when this scene happened, like, I was a little surprised that Cheryl's witch powers didn't go off. And then she didn't feel a disturbance in the force, basically. She just kept dancing. And I don't know. I was just kind of surprised that Cheryl wasn't like, something has happened to right. Nana Rose. Yeah. But okay, you know.
We get this scene between Veronica and Tabitha.
Yes!
That is just really the ongoing story of poor Veronica in this episode. She knows Tabitha's seen the future, and she just wants to know who's endgame. Which... a better question would be, do I end up like happy and with someone, and not so specifically, do I end up with Archie? But I think right. it does.
Archie, who is very often a major dud.
Yeah, but it does hint to this like Veronica and Archie like reuniting thing.
It does. Yeah. It does. Who, Kevin, do you want to see Archie end up with in the Riverdale universe?
Who do I want him to end up with? Kevin? I don't, like...
That would be nice.
I don't know. You know what? No, I want him to end... I want him to end up with Kevin's dad.
Yes! That would be very sexy.
I was going to suggest Dr. Cuddle Duke Jr., but Zaddy Keller's one.
We love Zaddy Keller, so yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're into it.
So then we get this final scene where everyone dies.
Most people die.
Yeah, everyone. Everyone dies.
Except for the most important person.
The baby Anthony.
Oh, I was going to say Moose, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, Moose. Right. Yeah.
Well, but like it's Archie, it's...
I wrote down who's still alive if that's going to help.
Okay, sure.
Betty, Veronica, Cheryl, Kevin, Moose, Anthony, and Heather.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they kill off Tony and Fangs. So I was like, okay, cool. So all of the bisexuals in Riverdale are dead. So maybe it's not the firstborns that are dead. Maybe they just killed all the bisexuals.
Moose is still alive.
Oh, true. Mm-hmm. I forget Moose was involved with
Midge.
Cannon fodder Carrie. Yes.
Yeah, Midge. Yeah.
Yes, Midge.
I also like was suddenly like, oh, I guess Kevin has an older sibling. Like,
yeah, that's true.
A lot
that's
of time to like remind us that Betty has multiple older siblings, and we're just like, they'll get that Kevin has one. Like,
yeah,
no worries.
Yeah, that's true because they spent so much of the scene. Like, having to remind us of, like, characters that we have fresh in our minds, like Charles. Mm-hmm. And then, like Hermosa, like, no Jason. One's gonna forget Hermosa. She's, like, the most fabulous character in the whole show.
The whole first season's about Jason.
Yes!
Yeah. The entire season. But then they're just like, people will buy the Heather as a sibling. Like, let's just, it'll be fine.
Totally.
Yeah.
So... and then
Anthony's okay, which is Anthony. I thought for a second it was going to be like there's another one, but no, it's just that Anthony is like the chosen one.
Yeah, special. Anthony is Neo from the Matrix. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
And then last but absolutely not least, we are confronted with Jughead's Rivervale doppelganger. And that's going to be some great acting for Cole in the next episode.
And real quick to address Heather says that she knows who can help her friend who's a necromancer, Sabrina, who no one seems to know, even though Cheryl has met her before.
In Riverdale.
True. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I forgot the story, like the timeline on that. Okay.
In Riverdale, Kate, I have to correct you. Yeah, so, I mean, this episode was fine. This wasn't the worst thing that's ever happened. It wasn't the best that's ever happened. It was fun. What's up next? What's up next? What's the next episode called, Kate? What's happening?
The Witches of Riverdale.
Oh, fun. Okay, great. That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And who was on your power list?
My power list is a little long this week because there's like two people and then just like a clump of people who are all like kind of interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
Percival. I put baby Anthony because he hasn't done anything yet, but it is becoming clear that he is going to be integral.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then just like a chunk of like Cheryl, Veronica, Betty, Archie.
Sure.
They're all kind of doing things.
Anybody not on that list, Kevin, that you would add?
And I've like her name just immediately just there's like a dead space, like it just doesn't register. But Cheryl's childhood
Heather.
Girlfriend.
Heather.
Yeah. I would say Heather.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because a lot of everything is because of Heather.
That's like, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Heather's leading a lot. Yeah. Yeah, and I had Percival, Cheryl, and Kevin. So like I think we're all pretty much on the same page. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about on that crush list? That sweet, sweet crush list. Kate.
Can you imagine not Moose? Just kidding, Moose.
Yeah, frame of Moose.
Moose.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, I was so happy to have like reasonable human Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cheryl for her crown.
Oh my God, love that crown. I had Jughead because he was looking very cute in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Moose, of course. And Tony because it's her wedding. Congratulations, Tony. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, dead for one episode, Tony.
Yes.
Anybody that you thought was looking particularly smokin' this episode, Kevin?
I mean, we got Archie and his abs, KJ's abs. I'm a sucker, you know, mm-hmm. the beefcake, you know, it draws me in.
Mm-hmm.
So, add the Christ imagery, sure, why not? But also, you know, I think Betty, like just being like the stepping up and being like, no, fuck this. Percival, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know,
beautiful, strong woman.
Yeah. And then coming back and having like, being like, all right, fine. And then lays the trap for Percival.
Yep. Yep. So. Definitely. Definitely. Yep. Makes her very crush worthy. I agree. Yeah. Well,
question.
Yes.
Where the fuck is Reggie?
Totally. Not in this episode.
He's working on the slots at the car dealership.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's too busy to go to the wedding.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
This has been an absolute delight. Kevin, so nice having you.
Oh, it's so nice to be here.
Yeah, so. You know, definitely, you know, if you're in the New York area or beyond, check out Geeks Out. Geeks Out rocks. Definitely check out FlameCon August 20th and 21st. Love it. FlameCon really is so fun and it just really feels very meaningful as a queer geek. It's a great space to be able to hang out at for a few days. If you liked what you're hearing, you know, once again, you can follow us on social media. You can write to us. We will respond. You can subscribe. And thanks to our editor, Angeli Mercado.
And our theme songwriter, Louis Aronowitz.
We will be back next week to cover
2 weeks.
In 2 weeks. Oh, it's every 2 weeks. Interesting.
But then it goes back to 1 week. It's just this next one is 2 weeks because next week's 4th of July.
Yes. So we'll be back in a few weeks to cover The Witches of Riverdale.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Louis Perlman.
I'm Kate Batter.
Bye.